What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. Every week, I bring you interviews with everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles, and this week is no different. If you're looking to take your side hustle to the next level as well, you need to check out the Side Hustle Journal. It's the only journal on the market focused on helping side hustlers like you expedite the process of starting and growing a profitable business in your spare time, no matter how busy life may be. And for a limited time, I'm giving away a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal to anyone who leaves a review on the podcast. All you need to do is leave a review, take a screenshot, and send me an email to hello@gritandhustle.co. That's hello@gritandhustle.co. I'll send you the link to pick up your free copy. All you need to do is cover shipping. Now, let's dive into this week's episode and get your ears serenaded with Jason Belisha, a.k.a. The Voice Over Beard. We'll talk about his Kickstarter failure that lost him several thousands of dollars and how he's used that experience to pivot into his now full-time job of being a professional voiceover artist. So without further ado, Jason Belisha.
I'm a full-time voiceover artist and photographer. Born and raised in Atlanta, and I'm also a drummer in two bands around the area, and went to school at UGA for sculpture, fine art, and that's where I also studied photography, and I had just plans to do all kinds of different things in the creative world, in commercial work particularly, not so much fine art. Mm-hmm. Strange that going to school for fine art, like, I fell in love with making things and doing things and completing things. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't like, the whole world that is attached to that with art critics and galleries. And it's all really, it's pretty corrupt. And I don't know. I think commercial work is a great testament to how good you are. Like there's sort of some sort of standard. If you can please a client, that's kind of what I enjoy more.
Cool. So, I mean, it sounds like you've got the bands, you've got the photography, voiceover work, everything else, life in general. So what made you, or I guess that better the question is, how long have you been in this full time?
Mm-hmm. Voiceover. Well, the thing is, it's all together one thing. I'm full time creative professional. Yeah. So voiceover makes about 80-85% of my income. And it's good that I have photography to kind of just fill in that gap, just to pay the bills. And that's been for the past, I guess I quit my job at the cafe like 6 months ago. And I decided
that was probably
to take
about
that
the time
launch.
We met first?
Yeah, yeah. It was right around the launch.
Yeah. Yeah. So what made you want to quit the cafe and jump into this full time? Because it's scary, right? You're basically cutting off the safety net and jumping full into it. What made you want to do that?
Just knowing that I'm incapable of following directions and being told what to do. Like here's what I like to say to myself. Like, I can produce results hella good, but I can't follow directions. So I can't work for anyone. And then before the cafe, I mean, I've had jobs that are more geared to my area, like working in a furniture design firm. It was my dream job. I was doing assistant design. I was doing website. I was doing email marketing. I was working with clients, doing their photography, doing kind of everything, just kind of the main man's number two, you know. And it just, I don't know, it was my dream job. I was on salary. And then the dude went crazy. Like, he took on too many projects at once, fell through, and, you know, I went into work one day, and he's out back in the alley smoking a cigarette and looks at me and says, "It's over." I'm like, oh, shoot. So So that's when I called a voiceover coach, because I'm like, man, I'm done relying on people for money. You can't trust people. He's a good guy. You know, he actually owed me like $3,000 and like didn't pay it back for the next 6 months. So I took a took on a voiceover coach, and yeah, she took me in for a down payment of a bar of chocolate because I had nothing. I had to go back on the food truck I was working on before that, and like it was a mess. But like, yeah, what drives me to want to do it by myself is just knowing that I'm stingy, man. It's not being self-centered. It's just knowing what I need. When I have someone standing over me and telling me what needs to be done for them to make money and for things to stay in order for their life, yeah. I feel it in my bones.
Yeah.
I start shaking. I can't take it. And it's not like an anxiety thing. It's just pisses me off.
Yeah. Yeah. You like to march to the beat of your own drum. And yeah, no, I think a lot of people can relate to that. So when we first connected, so how we met, just so people understand, when I was getting ready to launch my Kickstarter, I was like looking for people that could kind of give me some words of wisdom. It was before I launched, and I got on Kickstarter and I searched all the projects in Atlanta, Georgia, past and present, and I saw a current ongoing project, and it was ran by the guy we're chatting with now, Jason. And so I just shot him a message and said, hey man, you want to grab a coffee and let's meet up and give me some words of wisdom. So we met up, had coffee, and at that time, tell people what you were launching.
That was my minimalist wallet project called the Schmear Wallet.
How'd you come up with the name?
It was on the first day that I came up with the first prototype. It's like, it was a piece of cardboard and a sock out of my drawer. Like, I knew I needed something that was elastic, form-fitting, and could be stuffed with as many cards and accessories and whatever, as much as you want in there, and still tight and minimal and compact. So as I'm sitting there with, you know, this little cardboard rectangle and a sock, I just kind of start pushing the cards out the top. I said, huh, you just kind of smear it out, don't you? Oh, I have a brand name now. So I never turned back. It was like day one. I'm like, that's so catchy.
Yeah.
This has to work. And I just continued to fix the prototype up. We got some 3D printed versions made. You know, I already knew how to use AutoCAD, so I just kind of made a sketch of it and had it printed by some guy I knew in Florida.
So did you make the first prototypes yourself?
Yeah, like out of, you know, like I said, cardboard, you know, and I used that for 3 months and it still worked. Like, I don't know. I was trying to like find all the errors, and like it was a pretty good first try. Sure, they were like different shaped sized holes I wanted to cut out of it and like played with the thickness a little bit, but generally it stayed the same.
I know you do a lot of creative stuff, but had you done anything previously with like fabrics and things like that as far as like creating a physical product?
Not really. I mean, I have a lot of like home fixes. Like you can see like my bathroom sink, and like my bed riser over there is actually made of a bookcase that I sawed in half and turned sideways. And like, I like tinkering in general. So just home fixes, hacks, life hacks.
Yeah.
And that just led to, and also of course the interest in furniture design and industrial design that I've had since being in school for sculpture, just led to just having a general problem solving mind.
Yeah. So what about, so there's a lot of wallets out there. Most guys have a wallet. What about your wallet? Did you, or do you think made it stand apart from the crowd and make you want to take it to the next level?
Well, it was, first of all, the branding was totally different, because most minimalist wallets you see on Kickstarter or like anywhere else, they're just so whitewashed. They're so oriented for men, and they're made of like tactical materials, like carbon fiber and aluminum and, you know, paracord, and like they have like knives flipping out of them and like wrenches installed in them. Like, there's nothing for everybody. So yeah, the Schmear is totally unisex. Like, I kept looking back on my Instagram analytics and Google analytics, and my demo was like 50% female, 50% male, ages 18 to 45. I'm like, damn, this is so marketable.
Yeah.
Like, it looked so good.
Did you do anything specifically to kind of validate that idea? To say like, okay, like, people may actually think this is interesting, or did you just go straight to trying to put it out there?
Actually, my market research that I did, I mean, it was totally biased, and like, I couldn't afford like actually going to like a real marketing company or like a research company. But when I was working at the cafe, I would, if it was slow and there was no line, you know, if a guy or a lady showed up to get a coffee or something, be like, hey, can I show you something? And I'd whip out the wallet. I'd like, if, especially when they took out their wallet and it was like this bulky, like mess, I'd be like, can I show you something that might solve that problem? And more often than not, they were like, I want that. Dude, that is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's an important lesson for a lot of people that like have an idea, especially for a physical product, is there's lots of ways to validate an idea, right? There's no right or wrong way, but the most important thing is actually whatever you're doing is getting that feedback and ensuring it's not just someone like, you know, there's a word for this, but just kind of giving you some BS, right? So just saying it's good.
Validating you to make you feel good.
Yeah, to make you feel good. So.
And like I really tried to protect against that. Like I'd ask like friends of mine who are not afraid of like telling me like it is.
Yeah.
And I really only heard positive stuff.
Yeah.
So
what'd you do next?
Next, I learned everything I possibly could about e-commerce, Kickstarter, production, mass production, you know, getting supply chains together, just everything I needed to do. I knew how to build like a simple Wix website. Luckily,
what did you do to educate yourself on that? Was it like, did you go to the library and pull out some textbooks, or did you hop on YouTube, or what'd you do?
I mean, what do you think? It's 2018, bro. So everything you need to know is on the internet. It's crazy how much free information there is.
Yeah.
From like, you can learn how to file a patent. I wound up not filing a patent, but like, I mean, a lot of it's just common sense, just trial and error. Like, you know, how to seek out suppliers and manufacturers and how to use their language. Like, what does MOQ stand for? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you need to know how to speak their language. They take you seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I had to look like 10 people. I had to work like 10 people. I did that trick so many times where, like, someone will email me back and I have to play secretary on the like one@schmear.com email and be like, let me talk to the manager and see what he means. Like I pulled that trick like
I don't
all
know if the
time.
Owner will approve this.
let me check with him. And like, yeah, just like that's it was difficult trying to like fake it till you make it in this sense, because like people can tell, even regular people can kind of tell when something's kind of held together by duct tape. You know, like if you don't look super solid with like great photography, great graphic design, everything like looking rock solid, because I'm up against like brands like Nomadic and Tight Wallet and like all those, you know, that just have like huge teams and tons of funding. And like, I mean, what you see here, like this logo, like I designed that on what, like Mac Preview, like the little things with the marks on the E's. Like I just had to copy and paste the thing, and like it worked.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that's another important point. Use the resources that you have at your hands. Right. A lot of people try to overcomplicate things. Like, use the knowledge you have. Use the resources you have at your hands, and make something that is worthy of putting out there. It doesn't necessarily have to be perfect right from the get-go. So you had everything in order. Why did you decide to go to Kickstarter and not just throw it on a Shopify store or something like that?
The reason was because the plan from the start was never to make these by hand. Like, I don't know how to use a sewing machine. I learned how to do it like just for this design. Like, I can't sew anything, but I could make a hell out of a schmear.
Yeah.
So I knew that it's not going to be some kind of like homegrown kind of, you know, one-off sell them on the street kind of thing. The slow climb was not in my interest.
You weren't trying to start like an Etsy store or something like
right.
that and make them as a few orders come in here and there.
Exactly. And the cool thing is that these days we have Kickstarter. that basically brings your demand before your supply. Like, you can gauge all of that. It's like, it's like you don't even need to test run the
thing. It takes all the risk out.
It does take the risk. I mean, there, of course, there's not risks involved. And yeah, of course, like, it's not cheap to run a Kickstarter. Right. Holy shit. Can I say shit?
Yeah.
Shit. It was, it took everything I have and then some, like, financially and my energy. It was nuts.
Yeah. So what was the outcome of that Kickstarter?
The outcome was that I raised $8,000 by myself.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I'm proud of it. My goal was $23,000. So, but what I did to make sure it would happen was that I hired a PR company who I'm not going to name, who has a great track record. They have like several campaigns they've done that hit $1 million plus. And they were great on the phone, super nice people, just, you know, a few states away, and like we had a good rapport, and it just seemed like a good investment. Like, that's the only thing to do. Like, it hit me that, like, you know, I don't have that many press connections, and I don't have that much of a reach. I have a great circle of friends, but like it'll only go so far. So I need to, like, really, you know, go in on some good PR if I can. So it was like $5,000 down, and they get 15% of the final goal, and that still made sense. Mm-hmm. You know, if I, like, I kept doing the math in all these different scenarios. If I sell 500 units, I make this much, and it'll make sense. If I price them at this, and then I'm up till 2 o'clock in the morning just pacing back and forth with my calculator trying to figure out what I need, like, what's the actual hard goal to hit as far as, like, number of units sold. Hiring the PR company, yeah, caused me to raise the price of the item higher than I wanted to, which is, I think, one of the reasons why it didn't sell as well.
How much more?
About $15.
Yeah. Which is a large, probably, percentage of the item itself.
Yeah, it was supposed to be, like, a $25 or $30 thing. Because, like, no, it's not made of platinum. Like, it's made of sock material. But that cork is actually fancy, like, Italian fashion caliber cork fabric. And, like, yeah, that's beside the point. But I did have costs, you know, in production. And, like, $30 would have been a 400% markup, like you should, from wholesale to retail. That's what's recommended to keep your business afloat, because you do have overhead. You have hard costs as well. I did the math. It wasn't just one day. It wasn't just one time. Like, it was a lot of calculation, making sure that I would do it right. Mm-hmm. And it all seemed to make sense. But long story short, outcome of the Kickstarter, PR company sucked. Absolutely blew. They wrote a press release that literally said, "Jason is trying to help the environment in any little way he can." I kid you
makes
not.
Makes you sound like a tree hugger.
Makes it sound like a science fair project. Yeah. I'm like, are you kidding, lady? Like, so I got pretty upset with them. And, you know, I did all the photography myself. As a professional photographer, lucky I do have that asset. But I provided them with some images to use for Facebook ads. And they chose images that were like, you know, the wallet was like 10 feet away, halfway sticking out of someone's pocket, which is like, it was a good picture, but in context, not as the main picture of the ad. And they just made a mess of it. And meanwhile, my Kickstarter commercial that I scripted and designed the cinematography for and everything, and like, I think it was great.
Oh,
I think
it was great.
It got my point across. You know, I'd been rehearsing it in my head for months and months, and I really think it nailed my idea, what I was trying to say. And my friends loved it. The community loved it. It got shared 300 times on Facebook, seen by 36,000 people, mostly organic. That's valid, man. That looks good. So if the product seems valid, if my ad is valid and I'm boosting it on my own, and this PR company comprised of Facebook ad professionals or whatever can't get a single like, it's like, what am I paying for? So 2 weeks into the campaign, they stopped talking to me altogether, and I'm pissed, man.
So were you just out $5,000?
Yeah.
Really?
That was all my money. That was everything. And so how I salvaged it was...
Well, how did that make you feel, like, knowing that you put all your trust in these guys, and they just kind of left you high and dry.
How do you think? Like, I try not... I don't let myself get consumed by anger. Anger is better than depression. That is something a rabbi told me, actually, that changed my shit back in 2013. But a good kind of anger that fuels you to keep going and to not let anyone tell you you can't do it because of money or because of connections or resources. So, yeah, I was pissed. The good kind of pissed. So what I did was thought creatively. I said, well, I had a version of the wallet that was supposed to be made of silicone fabric that had like a magnet installed in it, and it was actually a little more complicated, but I had like a beta version as well that was made of this cotton spandex sock material that really I could make by hand. I didn't have to outsource production right away, because if I outsourced production, minimum order quantity would have been at least 500 in most places I checked, and I didn't have that, you know, $5,000-$6,000 up front to pay them. So, yeah, back to the sewing machine, man, and all those backers I had on Kickstarter. I took their emails, made, you know, a mailing list, and blasted them.
I think that's a good thing. So the Kickstarter fails, like, what happens there? You raise $8,000. Where does that money go?
Nowhere.
What about...
Their cards were never charged. That's how Kickstarter is, you know.
It's basically they placehold their cards. It's like they have a placeholder. If it gets funded, they charge your card. If they don't...
No transaction.
No transaction. And what about the backer information? It sounds like you got that?
Yeah. As long as I took it down before the end of the Kickstarter, before I canceled it, if you look at the Schmier Kickstarter, it says canceled, and I don't think I still have access to any of that info. So I knew that I had to like let all the backers know what is going on. It was like 5 days to the end of the campaign, and like everyone knew, sorry, man, it's not going to work. But, you know, sending bright, happy, shining emails, being like, we're going into production anyway. We're opening an online store. We're doing it in a way, you know, your card's not charged, but if you want one, order one here. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, copied and pasted the CSV list, and I had that going. So I had the Schmier online store on my site I made with Wix.com and a Shopify button. And yeah, just working through Shopify to just process orders. I didn't have a budget for advertising, but my Instagram was great. I had a company in, where were they, Tennessee or Miami, who found me. They're like an Instagram moderation company that also deals with like e-commerce and athletes and artists and all that kind of, just a collective in a way. So they loved my project. So they were actually moderating my Instagram for me, growing it for me. And that funneled a lot of purchases. So I was able to live off of like, man, if I sold like 4 or 5 a week, I lived off of it. It was super meager. Like, my costs aren't high. I don't have kids. And my rent is cheap, luckily. So, yeah, I lived off of, like, selling these darn things. And they did, like, trunk shows at stores and a few festivals. And I cleaned up, man, at the festivals. Like, I had a nice-looking table and everything. And everyone who saw one wanted one. That's what gave it. Like, I know, like, it's a good product. It's just bad PR. I couldn't scale it.
What's the status of Schmier right now as a company, as a brand, as a product?
Schmier, I'm calling it the long hiatus, the long sleep.
If I wanted to buy one right now, could I?
Very directly through me.
Right.
You would have to get on my good side, and maybe I'll sit down at the sewing machine and make you one, because I'm never touching that damn thing again if I don't have to.
Yeah. Where are you heading now? You're closing the doors on Schmier temporarily, possibly?
I'm leaving it ajar. Here's what I did, actually. The company that was... See, these wallets are made of upcycled socks that I got from Sock Fancy, who is a sock distributor. They're like box subscription socks, really good quality socks. I love those guys too. They're like right down the street from me, actually, and they distribute worldwide. They're doing awesome. So I thought, why not just climb up, vertically integrate. So knock on their door again, and I'm like, hey guys, like, I have a serious idea. Do you want to take Schmear? Do you want to make it Schmear by Sock Fancy or the Sock Fancy wallet, whatever you want? Just, you would have full rights to the idea and just hire me on as creative director, supply chain manager, whatever you need me for. And they entertained it. They thought, like, that could happen. We don't want to say anything right now, of course, because, like, taking on anything like that, you know, they need all new assets online, they need new photography, they need a whole marketing plan for that. So it's going to be costs of upwards of, who knows, $30,000, $40,000. I don't know their costs, but it's a lot, and they wouldn't half-ass it because they're a good company. Mm-hmm. And they're good at it. So they were kind of on the fence, so I... you're going to love this. I was doing a trunk show at a store in Decatur, and I saw on the wall these freakers. You know what freakers are?
No.
It's like a form-fitting bottle koozie thing that fits on like cans and bottles and everything. They exploded on Kickstarter in 2011. And I know the whole story of Zach Crane and his company, how they started. He started by hand and then moved into production at a sock factory. Like, he did it just like I wanted to. He's one of my biggest influences for this whole project, actually. So I knew what that was. I'm like, well, if they're in store, the owner of the store must have the contact of a sales rep who's closer to the CEO than customer service, so I can start there. So I got that email, sent a message to be forwarded to Zach Crane, be like, hey, you know, here's my thing. Do you want it? More or less. And a few weeks later, I'm overseas at a bar with my brother, and I get an email back from Zach Crane. I'm like, that was awesome. That felt so good.
Yeah.
It actually worked. He wrote back. He says, I've been trying to figure out how to make a wallet out of a sock for the last 4 years. Let's talk. So I fly back home, and he happens to be with his team at a trade show at America's Mart. So I pay $20 to park to go and talk to this dude and his team and bring samples for all of them. Here, keep them. You can have them. Enjoy them. And they love it. It's like, and we get along, and it's looking so good. And I'm like, this is going to be the thing. Something has to work. Just thankfully I pushed on and I didn't give up. This is it. Another month goes by and he's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's a good time for another product right now. And I'm like, dude. So that was like a month ago. And I think I decided to just like softly shut the door,
yeah.
Took the website down. And, it's not a sad thing. Like, I learned so much through all of that. Like, I'm never going to be upset about it. And, like, honestly, now I don't have to deal with it. Keeps me going is just remembering how I felt being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the emotional appeal of looking at people who've done it. Gary Vaynerchuk. I worshipped Gary Vaynerchuk that whole time building Schmear.
Yeah.
Like, I watched his videos every day. I bought his book. I mean, he's a smart marketer. And
even
now, like, you know, in my voiceover career, like, how to get in front of people, like, creative marketing. Where are the people you're trying to appeal to? Where do they go? What do they look at? Get between them and that thing.
Yeah, I mean, Ty Lopez does it great. A lot of people hate him. You know Ty Lopez?
I hate Ty Lopez, but he's a genius.
Oh, man,
here in my garage.
Absolute genius. But he does what you said, right? He goes to where his audience is. And if you watch interviews with him, he says, my audience is on Snapchat, so I'm on Snapchat. My audience loves cars, so I show them cars. My audience loves women, so I show them women. Like, he's like, I'm giving them what they want on the medium that they use.
Exactly. And, you know, that, like, what I learned from Gary was, like, how to really use Instagram and any social platform, really. But, like, you don't use it according to its rules or something. You don't use it just like, you know, they say like, oh, you should be on Instagram. Oh, what does that mean? Post selfies? No, dude. Content. So what I'm doing for my voiceover career now is, I've been doing it for the past 6 months or so. I do these like spoof videos, like parody videos on the voiceover industry. And so you never see my eyes. It's just from the nose down. So my character is the voiceover beard. And, if it's like a narration, it'll be for like a yoga video or something. But the instructions will be like, put both of your legs behind your head while standing straight up. Like, dumb shit, you know? But like, people love it. It's the easiest thing I do, but people love it. And the thing is, on Instagram, that's where you find ad agencies hanging out, production companies are hanging out, other brands are hanging out. And if I target them and get between them and whatever they're trying to see, then I have their attention. And you see this weird, you know, square clip of just a beard and a microphone, someone's half face, and like, you're gonna click it. And then luckily, you know, I do sound good, like in a high quality with my condenser mic and like my nice DSLR camera, like in 24 frames per second. So it looks all cinematic, and like, there's usually props involved. So it's eye catching. Mm-hmm. So, and I do have the skill to back up what you've just clicked. So I have good audience retention. I have 2,300 followers now. And it's like, that's all right. It's growing every day.
How'd you pivot into the voiceover thing? Was that something you had done before? Or you were just like, woke up one day and was like, damn, I got a sexy ass voice. I need to do something with this.
Actually, voiceover has been in my life for the past 3 years. I've had an agent for the last two and a half years. And it's hard to land an agent. And I managed to stick it with a demo that I just created myself, which never happens. I don't advise it to anyone. In fact, I don't advise for anyone to go into the voiceover industry right now because it's a mess. There's so many newbies and fresh talent who don't know what they're doing. And there are these pay-to-play sites that are just getting like bombarded, and the rates are going down, even in the real, like, the big industry of it. Like, when I started with my agent, she was sending me auditions for like, you know, $10,000-$15,000 60-second spots, and you just don't see that anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought, you know, I've always been told since fourth grade, when my balls dropped, people were like, mm-hmm. you got like a radio voice, man, what is that? So I eventually just thought I would, I think it was like a Facebook ad for like one of those pay-to-play sites caught my eye, and I'm like, maybe I should just do it, man. So I started researching a ton into how the industry works, how to create a commercial demo, a narration demo, a character demo, an audiobook demo, and so on and so forth. Now I have like 13 demos on my site.
So you create all these demos, then what do you do with them?
You try to land an agent.
What does that look like? Like, how do you, what does that mean, and how do you do it?
An agent will hopefully find work for you. And those are bigger jobs. Who hires the agent is either a production company who is hired by an ad agency, or the ad agency themselves will hire the talent agent to find the talent, because they don't want to go and cattle call all of the mediocre talent in the world. You know, they could do that if they wanted, but instead they go to talent agents to screen out the people who aren't good enough to land an agent. So getting in touch with an agent, getting them to listen to you, is difficult because everyone and their mom wants to do voiceover these days. It's like a hip thing. I get it, because it looks like a lot of money for a little work. And like, when you factor in only sitting at a booth and having an engineer edit for you, yeah, that's easy. But it's 90% marketing. And like, I'm like cold emailing production companies most of my life right now. And I'm, you know, hacking away on Instagram, but like, you know, if my agent starts getting really good leads for me and I actually do well in those auditions that I send her, then yeah, I could live off of just that, because it's much better money. So that's my eventual goal. I want to land agents in LA, New York, in Europe. I'm in kind of like, not an agency, but a collective in Saudi Arabia that they found me from Instagram. And I got a job with them on like day two. So yeah, Instagram's really helping out. But I do want to get these like really high-end agents. And they're a little harder to land.
Is that kind of a requirement for this industry? Like, you can't really get in until you have an agent to open the door for you, type of thing?
Well, there's two kinds of business models for a voiceover artist. There's like the small stuff, your freelance work, where like, you know, an amazing rate would be like 80 cents per word. Whereas like when you're working with big budget ads, you're getting like, you could make $10,000 in 30 seconds. You know what I mean? So, but you can't find those jobs by yourself. The jobs you find by yourself are just what like pays the bills. The agency jobs are typically just bonus. Unless you're something clicked for you and you live off of that agency, you know, that'll happen too. But these higher end agencies are really hard to land. So right now my commercial demo is good. It was produced by an actual voiceover coach that I saw for a few months, and we put together something that really works for me. But I've been told by, I was told by some people at a voiceover conference I was at last weekend that my voice is very marketable, but my demos are almost there. So now I need to fork out another $1,000 for a new demo. Because you can't really make your own demos, even though, like, even if you do know audio production, like, you need someone to hear you and interpret you. You're too biased on yourself. So that's my next step now. I have two windows open offering to make me that demo. So it's just a decision I have to make to go through with that. And then I can submit to all the casting directors I met this weekend, because it was a hell of a weekend. It was awesome.
That's cool. So what type of work, if any, are you getting right now? Like, are you landing all that through Instagram? I mean, how are you?
Most of it through Instagram, actually. A lot of it from like people on like Facebook communities for like film production or whatever, being like, anyone know a voiceover artist? And like a friend of mine. So it really helps when my friends tag me on that stuff. Luckily, all my friends know that I'm doing voiceover because I make them laugh with my silly videos. So you gotta, like Gary Vaynerchuk says, you gotta offer something first. What I'm offering is, I'm gonna put a smile on your face. So that's how I'm remembered with my brand, the voiceover beard. You can't forget it. So the awareness is great. I have friends scouting for me on Instagram. People are laughing and enjoying it, and they want to offer me something in return. So
is this kind of your strategy going forward, to kind of increase the awareness is on the through the comedic side of it, doing these parodies and things like that? Is that your plan? You want to keep doing that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Like, that's what's been working for me, because like the kind of jobs I'm getting now are like e-learning, short, informative documentary style things for like business to business type stuff. Not a lot of commercials. Like, I want more of that like sweet 30-second spot type of work. I get that. I get a lot of jobs from Your Pie, that pizza place, you know. I'm the voice of the brand. It's awesome. I love doing those commercials. And like the Remove UK one, like GoPro competitor type of camera thing, like that's a Korean production company that found me on Instagram. And like that's awesome. So the reason I care about having a high number of followers on Instagram is not because of the fame. Clearly, I don't care about fame because I don't even show my face. And like, it's just that, let's say I have 10,000 followers soon. Probably some of those 10,000 people are someone or know someone who works at a production company. Mm-hmm. And if you have anyone in mind, you're like, oh man, manager says I need to scout for a voiceover talent. Go to lunch with your friend. Have you heard of the voiceover beauty? He's this like silly guy who does stuff on Instagram. And then like they click it and they're like, oh shit, he's actually high quality. Like, go to his website. Oh, he's not joking. So just awareness, top of mind.
So it's Instagram your primary channel? Are you on YouTube and things like that as well? Or are you just trying to narrow your focus to Instagram?
Something else Gary Vaynerchuk says is to keep the content native to the platform. So my videos are all under 60 seconds because that's all Instagram allows. But it works great for me because no one's ever going to not click it because they think it's going to be too long. You know what I mean? No, everyone has time for, you go take a shit, you got time for a voiceover beard video, you know? So like, that's how I know I'll have retention. Instagram is a great, clean platform that I can get across a lot of information in one screen before the fold. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like on my page now, like, I do a video once every 2 weeks or a month or so, and before the fold, you see my last 3 months of work. in one screen. So it's just a clean platform to get your ideas across.
Cool. So it sounds like you're moving on from Smear. You're going to focus more on the voiceover beard and continuing to grow that and grow your audience and hopefully land some of these big gigs. So where, if everything goes great in a year, we come back, we do another interview, where do you see Jason and the voiceover beard being?
I would like it to be some kind of mysterious internet phenomenon that I would continue doing even if I'm just living off of my agents, you know, that I hopefully will have a year from now. You know, like an agent in every major city, that would be awesome. And actually landing like all those auditions. Because just because you have an agent doesn't mean you're actually like getting the jobs. Like, I need to build my chops. I need to have more coaching. I'd like to live off of just voiceover, and photography should be a passion project of mine, even though I do want to only do commercial work. I don't really want to make fine art. I just enjoy commercial work because I like making a client happy, you know, and that's just, it's all part of the same mind, the same game. I guess also, I would love for my bands to be successful. I'm in two bands now. One is more experimental. It's like a two-piece math rock kind of thing, and it's like aggressive and not as marketable as the metal band I'm in. So they're actually talking to a few record labels now, so I better be ready to tour and be mobile. Mm-hmm. And that's another great thing about voiceover. It's that I wanted to get this voiceover thing figured out before my band starts touring, because like I don't want to worry about money, especially when I'm out on my ass in the cold in a van. So that's a year from now.
Yeah, that's cool. So there's a lot of people that'll be listening to this that have ambitions to do something, whether it be something totally new or leveraging skills that they already have, such as you and your awesome voice. Like, what advice would you give someone that is thinking about it, like has that day job, like doing the whole 9-to-5 thing? What advice would you give that person that's like, you know, maybe I do want to start a side hustle, or maybe one day I do want to be, you know, a full-time entrepreneur? Like, any words of wisdom there?
Stop thinking about it. You either do or you don't. I swear, like, get in or get out. Put your nose down. Like, if you're just gonna like half-ass it, just get back to your job then, or swim upstream, do something irrational, and try to break a mold.
Create your market.
Yeah, one or the other. Follow the rules or don't. But whatever you do, do it bold.
Yeah, I love that, and it. You know, I went to a mastermind probably about 2 months ago, and the guy, he was handing out these little booklets to everybody, and on the front of it said, "Dream big and break some rules." Sweet. And I love it.
I dig it.
Yeah. Cool. I think this is a good stopping point, and I appreciate you taking some time out to chat, and I look forward to continuing to see the voiceover beard on Facebook and Instagram. So anyone listening, where can they find more about you and your projects?
You can find the voiceover beard at the voiceover beard Instagram at the.voiceover.beard. Links to my websites there. You can figure it out. My bands are Tiny Scissors and Toro. Just be able to Google search that. It's pretty simple. And photography, BelishaPhoto.com.
How do you spell Belisha?
BelishaA.
Cool. All right. Well, you guys go check that out. Show Jason some love on the voiceover beard. Like, you can find his bands on Spotify as well.
Yes.
I found him on there, so you guys can check that out. Until next time. Thanks, Jason.
Word. Thank you very much.
Boom! And that's a wrap, folks. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Jason Belisha over at The Voiceover Beard. You can find more information and links to all of what we discussed at bit.ly/hustletofreedom. That's bit.ly/hustletofreedom. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.